So we are holding on Samach Vav Amr Aleph for about 12 lines from the top, line begins Kan.
Samach
Vav Amr Aleph, yeah. Okay, so we've been discussing the various proofs that we have that the Omer is in fact brought on Tetzayin Nissen, not like the Beit Hussein claimed on the Sunday after Pesach, and therefore that also Shavuos is 7 weeks later, also whatever day of the week, rather than specifically on Sunday. So first, we had so far a bunch of proofs. We had Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai's proof from the fact that that you have two different psukim, one that talks about counting 50 or 49 days, and the other one says Sheva Shabbos of Tmimus Tiyena. So one's talking about when each week runs from Sunday to Shabbos, and the other one is talking about when it starts in the middle of the week. We had Rabbi Eliezer bringing a proof from the fact that the counting has to be based on Beis Din. So it can't be from Sunday, because you don't need to ask Beis Din when Sunday is. You know when Shabbos is, and you know when Sunday is, whereas you do have to ask them when Pesach is.
Right.
We had Rabbi Yeshua saying that Shavuos has to be similar to Rosh Chodesh, in the sense that with Rosh Chodesh, we know after a certain number of days is going to be Rosh Chodesh. So we had Rashi and Tosfos as different understandings of what exactly the comparison is, but basically that you know in advance what you have a pretty fair idea in advance what day Rosh Chodesh is going to be, and therefore similarly you have to have a pretty fair idea in advance what day Shavuos is going to be, as opposed to if you count.
Because you have
a certain number of days that make up a month, and you have a certain number of days that make up Sphere. That was Rabbi Yeshua. We had Rabbi Shmuel saying that you have the Omer on Pesach and the Shtei Alechem on Shavuot, and both of them take place near the beginning, so both of them have to be near the beginning of their respective Yom Tovim, on the first day or the second day, respectively. We had Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder saying that the word Shabbos itself means, just like you have the end of Tefillah and immediately after that is Shavuot, with the Shtei Alechem, similarly you have to have the first day of Pesach, and immediately after it is the first day of the Omer. We had also Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda saying that you always have to be counting 50, or rather 49 days. If you're going from the second day Pesach until Shavuos, and you're going to say Shavuos is always going to be on a Sunday, it may be a lot more than 50 days. It may be as many as 56, depending what day Pesach starts on.
It won't be the same
from year to year, right? We had Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder mentioning another one about, again, similar to Rabbi Eliezer before, that it has to be the counting depends on Beis Din, so not from Sunday where everybody knows when Sunday is. Rabbi Yossi saying that it means that it has to mean the Shabbat.
It has to be dependent on Beis Din.
Because the Pasuk tells us, Sfartam Lachem, which implies that it's something that depends on Beis Din.
If it just said a fraction, it could mean
accounting that you do by yourself without having to ask Beis Din. Okay, so then we had Rabbi Yossi saying that Mimachar to Shabbos must mean Yom Tov, because otherwise which Shabbos? You have many Shabbos throughout the year. And then he also, secondly, he says, not just that, but also we have the same argument as Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder before, that the word Shabbos before and the word Shabbos after implies that just like you have Mimachar to Shabbos and Ad Mimachar to Shabbos HaShviyas, so again, just like you have the end of Sphira and immediately after that Shavuos, the same way you have to have the beginning of Pesach and immediately after that Sphira. Okay. So now another proof. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the Gemara is going to say soon that a lot of them we can slog up. But each Tanner found his own proof. And again, I mentioned yesterday that aside from all these proofs that we have in the Gemara, aside from all of those, the Rambam brings yet another proof from a Pasuk in Yeshua. So yeah, apparently they need a lot of proofs, yeah. Okay. So, Rabbi Shimon Elazar, like this. You have one Pasuk that says, for 6 days you should eat matzahs. We say it every day in Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. Well, no, we don't actually. That's a different pasuk, rather, but whatever. It's in Parshas Re'eh. Another pasuk says you eat matzahs for 7 days. So what is it? Is it six or seven? Okay, that, how do we reconcile them? The answer is matzah she'iyatid yochel lo'oichel shiva min achadosh. If you have matzah that's made from the new crop of grain, which you can't eat it for the whole 7 days Pesach, because you can't eat chadosh until after the omer is brought, after yochel lo'oichel shisha min achadosh, but you can eat it for 6 days, even if it's brought from the new crop. Meaning, so that's the point. In other words, if the Omer was brought on the Sunday of Pesach, whatever day of Pesach it happened to be on, you wouldn't necessarily have 6 days that you could eat six matzah. Some years it would be six, but some years it could be five, and some years it could be even only one. You might have that the Omer, according to the Baal Shem Tov, would be brought on Sunday, the seventh day of Pesach, let's say, if it happened to come out that way.
6 days of Pesach.
So, no, the point is, right, it has to be, there has to be 6 out of the 7 days of Pesach that you're able to eat this matzah made from Chodesh. That's the point. That's the point. In other words, according to us, we say that the Omer is always brought on to Zionist in the second day of Pesach, so no matter what the Kriyas of Pesach is, you're always going to have 6 days that you can eat that matzah. As opposed to, according to the Baal Shem Tov, sometimes it would be six, sometimes it would be five, sometimes it would be four, depending on what day of the week Pesach begins on. If Pesach begins on...
Gee, I need any other proof than that one.
Well, that's one. It's a proof, yeah.
No, but it's
okay. Actually, Tosfos points out, maybe not, because the truth is, Tosfos points out, you have a Gemara at the end of Pesachim that learns a different thing from that, from those two Pesachim. That we learn from that, that since you have the one Pesach that says, Sheshes Yomim Toichol Matzah, implying that the seventh day you don't have to eat Matzah at all, we learn from that, that it's not only the seventh day, we learn throughout Pesach, you're not obligated to eat Matzah at all, except, I mean, if you can't eat Chametz, but the rest of Pesach, you could live on fruit or meat or whatever if you want. It's only the first night of Pesach, only by the Seder, the act have a mitzvah to eat masa. So we learn that from the fact that it says Shivach Yomim and it says Sheshes Yomim, implying that the seventh day is only optional to eat masa.
But the 6 days are not optional.
That's the point. No, the Gemara learns over there that what it means is Mashvi Rishus, Afshisha Rishus. It means just like the seventh day is optional. Mashvi Rishus, just like the seventh day is optional to eat Masa, so also Afshisha Rishus, the same way. The other 6 days, it's also optional. That's how the Gemara learns it over there. The Gemara learns it over there. Because the Bayei Mashvi, we learn from it. It's Loi Lamed Al Akma Yotza, Lamed Al Kar Kula Yotza. We would say, in fact, that the whole Pesach is optional, except that we have another pasuk, Ba'er of Tochel Matzah, that on the night of Pesach, you have to eat Matzah. Anyway, the Tosfos says, okay, maybe we can learn two things from the Sukkim. All right. Let's go on. So we can learn two things. One that you don't have to eat matzah during the rest of Pesach, only by the Seder. And two, this limud that we're saying over here, that the Omer has to be brought on the second day of Pesach. Okay, let's go on. Miyoyim haviyachem tistru. Next, the pasuk continues.
Tzachim doesn't mention that.
Because in Tzachim, it's not talking about the Omer. It's talking about the dinner of Pesach. You actually have.
That's not the dinner of Pesach.
No, it's not directly.
I mean, it's 6 days. You don't.
Okay, the Gemara mentions it at the end of Pesach, at the end of Tzachim over there. Yes, the Gemara mentions that limud there because it's relevant over there at the end of Tzachim. We're talking about the dinner of Masa. Here, it's not relevant because we're not talking about the dinner of eating Masa. We're talking about the dinner of the korban Omer, and then we're start counting Sfira and everything. At the end of Tzachim, actually, is where the Baal Amor takes the opportunity to put the halachas of Sfiras HaOmer, because the Baal Amor, the commentary on the, or actually arguments on the Rif. The Rif didn't write on most of the Menachos, because most of the Menachos are not relevant, is not applicable, rather, until the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt. So, but nevertheless, we have to know the Dinim of Sfira, so the Baal Amor puts the Dinim of Sfira there at the end of Tzachim, but yeah, we have it here in Menachos. All right, let's go on. The Pasuk continues. Let's go on. The Pasuk continues. Miyoyim haviyachem, and then it says tisperu. From the day you bring the Omer, you have to count. So that means yochol yiktzer v'yovi. So you would think maybe what it means is like this: you have to harvest the grain on the night of the 16th of Nisan, and you have to bring it. But the emesai should yirtzer yisper. Maybe it doesn't mean that you dafka have to start counting that particular night. Maybe it means that you have to bring the korban ha'omer on the 16th. But sfiras ha'omer, you could begin the earliest. You could start it on the 16th of Nisan. But you could, if you want, start it on the 17th or the 18th. How do you know not? Talmud loyma. Therefore, you have another pasuk in Parashas Re'e where it says mehochel chermesh bakoma, from when the sickle starts cutting the grain, the standing grain, tochel lisper, you should start counting. So that means it's not just you may start counting then, which you could misunderstand that from tisperu. Tochel lisper makes it clear you have to start counting from the day when the omer is brought, which is tetzayin nisan.
When it's cut, right?
When it's cut, yeah. Mehochel chemesh bakoma, from when the sickle starts cutting the standing grain, which is the Omer, because that's the first harvesting that's done, as we're going to say in a couple of lots. It's on the second night of Pesach. It's on the second night of Pesach, as soon as Yom Tov is over, yeah. So therefore, tochel lisper, you have to count. Okay, I mehochel chermesh tochel lisper. On the other hand, if we only had that pasuk in Parashat Re'e, then you would think the other way around. Yochel yiktzer v'yisper. Maybe what it means is like this. You have to do the harvesting on the night of the 16th of Nisan. You have to start Sfiras HaOmer also on that night. But the Amos side should use the Yovi. But that pasuk in Parashas Re'eh doesn't say anything about offering the Korban Omer. It only talks about the beginning of the harvesting. So therefore, maybe you could understand from that that it means you have to start the harvesting the night of the 16th of Nisan, and that is also when you bring, that is also when you start counting Sfira. But maybe you could bring the Korban Omer on some later day if you want. It doesn't have to be during the day on the 16th. Talmud Lomar, no. Therefore, the pasuk says, and therefore you have back to the Pasuk and Emor that it says from the day you bring the Korban Omer. So that makes it clear the Omer itself has to actually be offered on the 16th of Nisan.
And cut on the...
It has to be cut the night before. Okay, well that's the next thing. Okay, but if we only had the word Miyoyim HaViyachem, then you would be back to thinking like this. You would think that maybe everything should take place during the day. You do the harvesting during the daytime at the 16th of Nisan. You also start counting Sfira during the day, and you bring the Korban Omer during that same day. No, Talmud Lomar, Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos Tiyana. Therefore, the pasuk says you have to have 7 complete weeks.
Night and day.
Night and day. Amos Atamosa, Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos. How are you going to have complete 7 complete weeks? Bizman Shata Maskal Limit Erev, only if you start counting the night before, because the Vayi Erev Vayi Voiker, Jewish day begins the night before. Because the Jewish day begins the night before, so that's the only way. You have Tmimis as if you begin the night before. As a matter of fact, actually, by the way, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, you have from the Rishonim, we know that on Shavuos night we daven particularly late. We don't start Ma'ariv immediately at Seis, as we do by most other Yom Tovim. It's more closer to Rabbeinu Tam's time. And that's another application of the Sheva Shavuos Tmimis in order to make sure that the 49 days of Sfira really are Tmimis before we go into Shavuos. I guess, yeah.
That's
yeah. Halacha, yeah. Well, it's not an absolute requirement in halacha, but it says in Shulchan Aruch that that's the proper way to do it. Okay. Nah, I don't know if the Machaber says it or the Ramah says it, but whatever. It's brought over there. Okay. So that makes it clear. So far, what it means is that, we know that it means, therefore, it can't mean that you can start Sfira sometime after the 16th. We know it can't mean that the Korban can be brought sometime after the 16th. We know that it can't all take place by day. And now the fourth possibility, maybe now you would think you should do the harvesting and the bringing of the Korban and Sfira Sa'omer all begin at night. Talmud Lomar, mi yom haviyachem. Therefore it says from the day you bring. And now, Mephoshim asks, what's the Havam? And we know that all Korbanos are brought by day. Why on earth would we think that this Korban particularly is brought at night?
There's nothing else you bring at night.
Right? Nothing, the Emurim of a Korban that was brought during the day can be brought during the night, right. The Korban Pesach is brought during the day. So anyway, one answer is because, after all, the Korban Omer, unlike most Korbanos, it's not meant for Kapara or anything like that. It's meant strictly in order to be Matir Chadosh to be eaten. So you would think maybe it's different than most Korbanos and can be brought by now. Once you're cutting a knife, yeah.
So that's
Talmud Lomar mi yom haviyachem. That is why the pasuk stresses on the day that you bring it. Okay, so what's the bottom line we get out of all this? Sfira u'sfira balayla, the cutting of the grain, of the barley, and the beginning of Sfira Sa'omer have to be by night. V'hava b'yom, and the actual bringing of the Korban itself has to be by day.
The Korban comes afterwards.
The Korban comes the next day. There's a mimer from the Rebbe, and probably my mimer from previous Rebbeim also that talk about it, I don't know, that talk about the deeper idea behind this, which is Sfira Sa'omer is meant to be the idea of Avodas Avirurim. That's what we're accomplishing during Sfira Sa'omer, is to be Mavarer ourselves in all the 49 aspects. So that has to begin with night, because that's how Virurim work. Bereisha Hashoicha, first you have the dark, Vahadur Nahora, and then you have the light. That's how they just created the world in the first place, by Yehara Vayvoicher. As opposed to the Korban is brought by day, because the Korban looks at the Korban is a foretaste of how it'll be. La Asid Lava, where we have the day, where we have the light of the day, Vahi Ur, and therefore the Korban specifically is brought by day, and in fact in general, by Kodshim, the rule is Halayla Holachacha Yom. When it comes to Kodshim, you have first the daytime and then the nighttime, the opposite of what we do for most other areas of Halacha.
Well, it would be very difficult to bring the Korban at night.
No, it wouldn't be very difficult. If Hashem had told us to do it, we would do it. And the fact is, again, the Chalovim Ve'evorim, the remaining pieces of the Korbanos, can be burned by night, yeah. Okay, so now going back to all the...
You have to have LED lights.
No. I mean, they could do it by the light of torches or whatever. I don't know. Okay. Omar Rava. Kulu Islahu Pircha. All of these proofs that we were bringing before from Rebbechan and Zakai and onward about the fact that the Omer is brought on any day of the week on Tezayin Nisan and that Shavuot is always 50 days after that. Kulu Islahu Pircha. Most of these arguments, you can slog them up. Bamitarti Tanoi Basroi, except for two later Tanoim, Bain Bimasnisa Kamaisa, Bain Bimasnisa Basraisa, whether in the first Braisa, we had one group of Tanoim in the first Braisa, and then we had another Braisa that gave another group of Tanoim, where some of them repeated the same argument, that there you have two of the later Tanoim in each of those Braises, the less Lehu Pircha, where there's no slogging them up, their arguments are ironclad, that the Omer is brought on Tev Zayin Nissen. Let's go through them. Even if Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai, you're going to use Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai's argument that he says, how do you prove that the Omer is always brought on Tev Zayin Nissen and not necessarily on Sunday, because you have one pasuk that says Tisperu Chamishim Yom, you should count 50 days, and another one that says you should count 7 complete weeks, so one is talking about when it starts on Sunday, and the other is talking about when it comes on another day of the week, but we could slug that up. Dilma Kida Abaya, because after all, we could say maybe those tzukim instead teach us the din that Abaya said. Do Amar Abaya mitzvah l'mimni yomi or mitzvah l'mimni shavui. Abaya says, as we're going to discuss soon, that it's a mitzvah when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer to count the individual days as well as to count the weeks. So maybe that's what these tzukim are teaching us. One, that you have to say, for example, today is 35 days, and another that you have to say today is 5 weeks. By the way, you have, by the way, a machlokas rishonim, which is brought in Shulchan Aruch. Is it that you only have to mention the weeks at the ends of the weeks? Is it, for example, that when it comes to that you have day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, day 7, for example, you'd be obligated, according to this, to say today is 7 days, which is 1 week, but then on the 8th day, you could just say today is 8 days, 9 days, 10 days, etc., and only when you get to, 1 second, and only when you get to 14, would you have to say today is 14 days, which is 2 weeks, or is it that you have to mention the weeks, and the odd days, every day, which is in fact the minhag of how we do it nowadays.
So in Bereshit, you count first the day, and then at the end of the week, you count the week.
In Bereshit, it doesn't say anything about a week. It doesn't use the word Shavuot there at all.
Yeah, Shabbos.
It doesn't even say the word Shabbos there. It says Vayishvayi. But whatever, the point is, you have Rishonim who learn that you're technically only required to say the weeks at the end of each week, on the 7th day and the 14th day and the 21st day, etc. And you have others who say that, no, you're supposed to say it every day. And that's taka how we are knowing that every day, on the 8th day, we say today is 1 week and 1 day, etc. Right.
The other alternative would have just been
just at the end of the week. Right. Okay.
How would you count the days then?
Again, you would say today is the 8th day, today is the 9th day, today is the 10th day, etc. Today is the 14th day, which is 2 weeks.
Which is 2 weeks.
Okay. Fine. So anyway, maybe those Sukkim are teaching us a bias in. So therefore, maybe Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai can't use it as a proof about what day of the week, Sfira starts on. Okay, I mean, so what was Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai thinking when he used that argument? I mean, he does agree with Abaya's din. Some of the Achronim say, I think the Keren Ora says, okay, but Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai would answer to that. After all, what's the whole reason you have to mention the weeks at the end of each 7 days is because you have to notice that it's been X number of days since Shfira started. If you're going to go like the Beit Tosfos, that it always starts on Sunday and ends on Shabbos, there's no reason to mention the weeks. You know that it's the end of a week because it's Shabbos. Okay, but still, the fact is that it's not an ironclad argument. Okay. Inidur of Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Are you going to say we can use Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua's argument, where Rabbi Eliezer said that the Sfira Sa'omer has to be dependent on Beis Din, so it can't begin on Sunday, where then it doesn't depend on Beis Din, because Beis Din doesn't determine when Shabbos is. And Rabbi Yeshua saying that Shavuot has to be similar to Rosh Chodesh, that there has to be a known time when it takes place, or that you know in advance about when it's going to be, etc. Because he learned it from the comparison between the fact that you have a certain number of days in a month and you have a certain number of days leading up to Shavuot. Okay, but we could slug it up. Mimai to be Yom Tov Rishon, Kori. After all, fine. Okay, so it means that it depends on Pesach and that it has to be a certain time during Nissan and a certain time during Sivan. But who says at the beginning of Pesach? Duma be Yom Tov Achron, Kori. Maybe the pasuk means that therefore that you should start Sfiras HaOmer on the last day of Pesach, and Shavuot should be on the 12th day of Sivan, or let's say. So So you'll still have the thing.
Say that for?
Because let's say you don't need all they're saying based on their arguments is that you have to have tefillah that depends on Beis Din. But that doesn't definitively tell us it has to begin from the second day of Pesach and end on the sixth of Sivan, or fifth of Sivan, whatever. It could equally well begin in the middle of Pesach and end a few days later in Sivan, etc. It would be every year you'd have the same date, fine, but that doesn't necessarily tell us the actual beginning date or the actual end date.
Either you interpret that like by the same.
Okay,
or you interpret it like us.
But nevertheless, it's still not an ironclad proof. You could say Mimach or Shabbos. It could be Mimach or Shabbos means from the day after one of the other days of Pesach. Mimach or Shabbos, for example, it could even be from the day after Shavisha Pesach. Shavisha Pesach is also a Shabbos in that sense. It's also a day when you don't do Malachim.
Every day of Pesach is a Shabbos.
Okay, in that sense, because Chol HaMoed is Taka also Vatiyah is Taka. Well, you have a Machloikas actually, whether Chol HaMoed is also to do certain Malachas Daraisa or Darabanan. But okay, let's say, for example, we could say it means you begin from the day after Shavisha Pesach. You don't have a definitive proof that means.
It has nothing to do also when they get a Torah and Shavuot.
Yeah, no, I mean, so we would say, okay, so we would say, in other words, fine, so the Torah didn't set up a Yom Tov on the actual day of Matan Torah. When you get down to it, technically, Shavuot is not always on the actual day of Matan Torah anyway. First of all, you have the opinion in Shabbos, so you have the opinion of Rav Yossi, that Hosif Moshe Yom Tov Midaito, that Moshe added an extra day to Shloshes Magvala. According to that, the Gemara says over there, the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan. In Eretz Yisrael, that means nowadays they're never celebrating Shavuot on the actual day of Matan Torah. You have, for that matter, even in the time when they were Makadosh al-Piyariya, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, that Shavuos could conceivably come out on the 5th or the 6th or the 7th of Sivan, depending on the length of Nisan and the length of Iyar. Even nowadays, you have the famous thing that the Rebbe talks about if a person crosses the international dateline during Sfira, where they have to celebrate Shavuos on their own date, and it'll come out different than the people where they are now. So yeah, so not necessarily is it explicitly tied to the actual date of Matan Torah. Yeah. Okay. So we could slog up their proof. Okay. What about Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira? On the other hand, in that first Braisa, when we get to the last two Tanoim mentioned in that Braisa, Rabbi Shmuel's proof that the Torah says that you have the Omer on Pesach and the She'alechem on Shavuos, and that means both, just like the She'alechem is on the first day of the Yom Tov, so also the Omer has to be as close as possible to the first day of the Yom Tov. And Rabbi Yehuda, the She'alechem is brought on the one day of Shavuot.
Right.
And Rabbi Yehuda,
so would there be the Omer also?
So therefore the Omer has to be as close as possible to the first day of Yom Tov, yeah. Meaning the second day. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira's proof that when it says Shabbos afterwards, Abi Machar to Shabbos HaShavuos, then you make Shavuos, meaning that Shavuos is directly after the end of Sfira, and the same way therefore the beginning of Sfira has to be directly after the beginning of Pesach. There's no shlugging them up. There's no way to slog up those arguments. Those are ironclad proofs that Sfira Sa'omer must begin on Tezayin Nissen and no other day. Okay. Next, let's go through the second Braisa. In the second Braisa, we have Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda saying that he's learning from Tisperu Chamishim Yom, that the counting always has to be 50 days, or rather 49 days, whereas if you count from the second day Pesach until Shavuot, and you're going to say Shavuot is always Sunday, then you may have more, you may have as many as 56 days. Okay, but we can slug it up. Image of Yosef of Yehuda, Havamina, you're going to use his argument, but Havamina, you could argue back. Okay, what it means is you count 50 days from, in other words, you don't count the days from the second day Pesach until Sunday. You're not actually starting to count, let's say, Chesayin Nissen, a particular year, comes out on Monday. Hypothetically, let's say, you're not going to start counting then. You're going to start counting the following Sunday, Chabalas Nissen, like the Bai Tosin say. Fine, from then until 7 weeks later, Sunday, it's 49 days. It's 56 days since the first day of Pesach. So what? We don't care about those extra days. You're not counting them anyway. So that's not an ironclad proof. Okay. Are you going to use Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira's argument from the second Braisa, where he used the same argument as Rabbi Eliezer, that the counting has to be dependent on Beis Din? Then you have the same issue as before. It has to depend on Beis Din. Mimai de b'yom tov rishon koi, but who says mimachar to Shabbos means the day after the first day of Pesach? Dilma b'yom tov achron koi, maybe it means the day after the last day of Pesach, means achron to Pesach, exactly what we just said before, right? Yeah. And Rabbi Yossi, and as far as Rabbi Yossi, we had in the second Braisa, at the top of our Amud, we had, he brought two arguments. One is that it can't mean Shabbos, it can't mean the weekly Shabbos, because there are many Shabbosim during the year, and it wouldn't be clear which one. And also, he says, then you have also the argument about Shabbos Lamata and Shabbos Lamaila, the same thing that Rabbi Yehuda ben Seder said in the first Parashah, that just like at the end of Sfira, you have the last day of Sfira, and immediately after that, Shavuot, the same thing you have to have the first day of Pesach, and immediately after that, the beginning of Sfira. So, Rabbi Yossi Nami Chazer LePircha. Apparently, Rabbi Yossi himself realized that his first argument about Shabbos Bereshit, that there are many Shabbosim during the year, he himself realized it's not an ironclad argument. And the reason why it's not is because, after all, yes, it's true, of course, there are many Shabbosim during the year, but after all, said and done, we have a concept that's called Loi Bol HaKosav Liston El Lafarish. When the Torah is telling us something and it's not clear what it means, the Torah is telling it in the way that in a way that you can deduce from the pasuk itself what it's actually trying to say. Without having to, we had an example actually in last week's parasha. Rashi mentioned that when Peleg is born, when Peleg is born and his father Aver calls him Peleg, Ki B'yom of Niflagah Aretz. So Rashi says that means that the tower above all, the splitting of all languages, happened in the year that Peleg died. And Rashi says, why can't it be sometime in the middle of Peleg's life? Because Loi Barkosim Listim El Lafarish. If the Torah is trying to give us a hint of when Dor HaFloga happened, it has to be that it can't be that it's sometime during his life. The man lived 200 odd years. You wouldn't know what year it is. It must be, therefore, it's in his last year. So similarly over here, therefore, you could say you're arguing that it can't mean Shabbos Bereshis, that it can't mean the weekly Shabbos because there are 50 odd of them during the year. Okay, but obviously in context, the pasuk is talking about the Shabbos after Pesach. So it's not an ironclad proof. His proof from Mimachar to Shabbos, that Mimachar to Shabbos can't mean the weekly Shabbos because there are a lot of Shabbosim, it's not an ironclad proof, because the counter answer would be, okay, the very fact that Torah uses the word Mimachar to Shabbos in this context obviously means the Shabbos after Pesach, otherwise what else could it mean? So therefore, the Heiner Dekom of Oid, that is why Rabbi Yossi himself is not satisfied with his first explanation, and he gives the second one about Shabbos Lamata and Shabbos Lamaila, about the end of Sfira followed by Shavuos, and similarly the beginning of Pesach followed by Sfira, and therefore again that one is ironclad. So that's what we mean. When Rava said that in each of these braises, many of the arguments can be slugged up, but the last two arguments in each one cannot, that's what Rava meant. That's what he means. In the first braisa, you have Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder's arguments are solid. And in the second braisa, to prove that the Omer is brought on Tezayim.
That's their arguments,
that we said already. We said that Rabbi Shmuel says that it has to be regular Tchilas Regal, as close as possible to the beginning of Yom Tov. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder saying that it has to be the end of Sfira and then Shavuos, and therefore also the beginning of Pesach and immediately after that Sfira. Those arguments are ironclad. And similarly, in the second braisa, Rabbi Yossi's second argument is ironclad. Okay, so that's it. So we have
is what?
That is ironclad because he used the same
which argument?
The argument that he says that Nemar Shabbos Lamatav and Nemar Shabbos Lamaila. The same argument as Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder uses in the first braisa, which we said is ironclad. So Rabbi Yossi uses it as a second argument, so it's also good. So that's it. So we have
because
you don't have any way of slogging it up because it obviously means, therefore, that, yeah, it means you end Sfira and you go into Shavuos. Therefore, it means you begin Pesach and you immediately go into Sfira. Okay, so that's it. So those proofs are valid. Those can't be slugged up, and therefore we can use them against Baitosim or whatever.
So that's the final argument.
So those are the final arguments.
The end of Sfira must signify the beginning of Shavuos. Therefore, the beginning of Sfira must signify that it's done on the second
that
day.
Right. So that's one of the arguments, yeah. And then the other one was Rabbi Shmuel's argument that it has to be as close as possible to the beginning of Yom Tov.
Which is...
So therefore, with Shavuos, it means one... No, it's not practically the same. It's slightly different. In the case of Shavuos, it means that the Shtei Alechem are brought on the one day of Shavuos, the first day of that Yom Tov season. And similarly, therefore, the Omer has to be brought as close as possible to the beginning of Pesach. It can't be the first day, so therefore it's the second day by elimination. Fine. So now let's talk a little bit about Sfira Soimer. Gufa, getting back to, we said before, Omer Abaya, mitzvah l'mimni yomer, l'mitzvah l'mimni shavui, it's a mitzvah to count the individual days as well as the weeks. So, how was it actually done? Rabbonon devei Rav Ashi, monu yomer, monu shavui. That's Abaya saying. Rabbonon devei Rav Ashi, so the chachamim of the yeshiva of Rav Ashi indeed did that, monu yomer, monu shavui. They did. They counted the individual days and they counted the weeks.
Nobody knew that before about you.
Right. On the other hand, Amnema, money yoimi, v'loi money shivui. On the other hand, Amnema disagreed with that. He counted only the days and not the weeks. So he would say, for example, on whatever day of Sphira, he would say, today is X number of days. He wouldn't say the week. Why? Omar, because he said Zeichel Amikdashu, because after all, he said the counting nowadays is not really Minat Torah, because it's Minat Torah only when there's a Korban Omer. The whole thing, he says, is only Drabbanan. Therefore, it's enough to count the days. The Chachamim didn't require you to count the weeks. Now, who is the Halacha like in that? The Rambam actually writes that Sfira Sa'omer nowadays is Daraisa. So one way of looking at it is that, therefore, that he's disagreeing with, that he holds, the halacha is not like a Amemer, the halacha is like the Chachamim of the Yeshiva of Rav Ashi. If they counted the days and the weeks, evidently they must have held that it's Daraisa. Whereas Amemer holds it's Darabonim. So the Rambam would say that the halacha is like them, and not like a Amemer. Another interesting way of looking at it actually is that Amemar might also agree that the machlokas rather would be as follows: not so much whether it's nowadays Zaraisa or Zerabanan, but does the kedusha of Yerushalayim and of the Beis Mikdash continue to exist after the Churban, which is a topic that we've talked about before. If you say that it does, then you would say, even though nowadays there's no Beis Mikdash, nevertheless the kedusha of the Beis Mikdash still exists. In principle, you could bring a Korban Omer, except practically speaking, we can't because we don't know the Makom HaMizbeach, etc. Then, therefore, that would be reason enough to count the days and the weeks, like the Chachamim of the Yeshiva of Rav Ashi did. As opposed to, Amnema might be taking the view that the kedusha of the Beis Mikdash expired, which the Ravid, for example, holds that way. Also, that the kedusha of the Beis Mikdash expired once it was destroyed. The Ravid holds that way, for example, and therefore, according to him, therefore, there'd be no reason to count the weeks. So it's not so much
to the Ravid, you can't offer a Korban either if you know where
those exactly. Days. Right. Yeah. Okay.
One second. How is the counting of weeks connected to the presence of the Beis Hamikdash?
Well, so the idea would be, in other words, if the counting of the Omer is Daraisa, then given that we had the two psukim that Rabbi Yosef ben Zakkai brought before, one which mentions counting the weeks and one which mentions counting the days, if you say it's Daraisa, then both of them are required. If you say it's Darabanan, then the Chachamim did not necessarily impose on us to do both of them.
You could say one is Darabanan and one is
Darabanan. No, because originally they were both Daraisa. So if we say that there's no Sphira of the Omer nowadays because there's no Omer, then it would only be Darabanan. Okay.
The Torah says,
but that's in connection with the Korban Omer. There's no Korban Omer now. Okay. Tosfos gets into Tosfos discusses a number of things that come out. Now, most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that. Most of the Rishonim understand that nowadays, indeed, Sphira Sa'omer is only Drabanan, meaning basically that the halacha is like a Amemar. Nevertheless, though, the minhag is to say the weeks as well, even though technically you're not required to. There are a number of things that come out from the fact that it's Drabanan. One of them is, Tosfos starts by saying, you're allowed to count Sphira Sa'omer even before you know for sure it's night, even Bein HaShemoshes, because it's only a suffix Drabanan. That's one thing that comes of it. Then you have also, we mentioned earlier on the Omud that Sphira Sa'omer is supposed to take place by night. And we said also the harvesting of the Omer is supposed to take place by night when there's a Korban Omer. Does that mean that if it's done by day, it's possible? Or does it mean that you're supposed to do it by night, but if they couldn't do it by night for whatever reason, then they can do it during the day? So Tosfos brings from Halachas Gdolos that if you forgot that if you were to harvest the Omer, the barley for the Omer by day, b'di'evit, it would be kosher. And similarly, if you count Sfira by day, then it would be kosher.
The day?
What?
Or when the Beis HaMikdash was...
When the Beis HaMikdash is standing, if they were to harvest the Omer by day, even though they're supposed to do it the night before, the Baha'i learns that b'di'evit, it would be kosher. And similarly, if you count Sfira by day, b'di'evit is kosher. Tosfos disagrees with that whole concept. This is why we have the halacha that we know nowadays, where if you don't count by night, you count by day without a bracha. The reason why without a bracha is because of that machlokas, whether you can even count by day, where according to the halacha as early as you could, and according to Tosfos you could not. That is why we count without a bracha nowadays if you do it by day. And then Tosfos also mentions at the end from Halachas Gdolos that if you missed one day, then you can't count the rest of the days because then it's not Tmimos. And Tosfos says, I can't believe that, I can't accept that. Lamaisa and Shulchan Aruch, as we know, the halacha is, as we know from every year, if you miss an entire 24-hour period, you continue counting, but without a bracha, because you have the suffix whether you should be counting at all. According to halacha's gross, you shouldn't.
No, if you
miss an entire night and day. Yeah, if it's a suffix, then again, then you can continue. But if you know for sure that you missed a night and you didn't count the following day with a bracha, the rest of the days you can only count without a bracha because of what Baal Halacha's Gdolos is saying. Whereas according to Tosfos, it wouldn't be an issue. According to Tosfos, even if you had missed a complete day, you could still count the following days with a bracha. But again, because of suffix brachas lahakol, then yes.
I suppose that you would continue up with
you would
bracha,
continue with bracha, right, on the basis that, so what? So you missed a day. You still have the mitzvah of counting the days after.
Why are we making a bracha for?
Well, because even if it's Dirabanan, you still make a bracha on things Dirabanan, same way as we make a bracha on Halal, and on Light in the Menorah, and the second day of Yom Tov, etc.
So it's considered as a Dirabanan, if you have to say a bracha every
no,
day?
Because,
even when
No. Tosfos is not getting into that. According to Tosfos, it may well be Dirabanan, but nevertheless, okay, you missed a day, so it's not Tzminos. Big deal, you still have a mitzvah to count every day.
Even though it could be just...
Again, the halacha is not like Tosfos in that. The halacha is we count without a bracha in that case.
Right.
But yes, according to Tosfos, doesn't matter that it's the Rabbanon, so what? The mitzvah is still to count every day. You missed a day, it doesn't ruin the following day. Okay, but there's a number of other things that come out of the fact that again, we say that most of the poskim, unlike the Rambam, hold that nowadays, Sfiras Omer is the Rabbanon. There are a number of dinim that come out from that. You have the case where there was a suffix, you have a suffix, whether you counted, whether you continue counting afterwards with a bracha. You have cases where, for example, the Alter Rebbe mentions, let's say, a person didn't count the days and the weeks. Let's say they only said today is 8 days, and they didn't mention that it's 1 week and 1 day. The next day, they can still continue counting with a bracha, because we say it's only suffix derabanan.
So one question, when you say miss the day, does that include crossing the date line?
No, because then, well, according to other poskim, maybe, but according to the Rebbe, who holds you continue with your own counting, then no, you haven't missed any day. It means that once you go across the date line, everybody else there now is going to be counting at 37, and you're still only going to be on 36 or whatever, vice versa. But that doesn't matter.
It's
your count. Yeah, there.
The Shavuos will have to keep.
The Shavuos you'll have to keep your own date, which is why, of course, when possible, people try to avoid crossing the date line. If they have to fly between here and Australia doing Shvira, they take the long way around rather than crossing the date line. But yeah.
Well, once again, you could say the same actually for Rosh Chodesh if you cross the date line.
No, because Rosh Chodesh depends on the Kriya for Beis Din, so that has to be the same for the whole world.
Right.
It's only
Australia in 24 hours. And you could either be in the right way or the wrong way.
Only Sfiras HaOmer and Shavuos is there this issue.
You're here, then you're there.
Okay.
Either you're celebrating the right day or
okay, let's go on.
That's interesting.
Okay, let's go on. Continuing with the procedure of how they brought the korban omer, the Mishnah says, katsuhu, okay, so they harvested the grain for it, like we described before, v'nasnu b'kupos, and they put it into the basket. Now then, hebi'u l'azorah, the next thing is they bring the grain to the azorah, v'hoyu mahavavin oseh b'ur, and they would singe it in the fire while it's still on the stalks. This is the point that I made. You started with 3 saw, or 5 saw, according to the different opinions in the first Mishnah, of, hold on, we haven't even gotten to the sifting yet. According to the Meir, we're talking about before you still have the stalks of grain. You still have the kernels are in the stalks, no threshing's been done, no winnowing, no nothing, you still have the actual stalks. The Meir says at that point you bring them to the Azara, and you hold them for a short while over a fire to start toasting them, or whatever. Kedei l'kayim by mitzvahs koli. In order to be l'kayim, the Torah says it has to be aviv koli ba'esh. It has to be fresh grain, parched, toasted in the fire. So therefore, the Meir says that's how they would do it, while it's still in the store.
Are there any other recipes that call for doing that, or is it just unique to this?
I mean,
is that the way they used to produce food for certain recipes?
I have no idea. Could be. The Chachamim say no, that's not the proper way to do it. It has to be done in a keli, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Therefore, according to the Meir, they're doing it directly while it's still in the stalks. Right. According to the Chachamim, no. What they do is first, the Kanim of a Kochas Chovzinoi, so what they do is like this. First, they have to thresh it to get it out of the stalks and out of the shells and whatever that cover the grain. Now, normally the way you would do it, Rashi describes, normally when you have dry grain, you would beat it with sticks, and that would break off the shells around it. That would break off the shells and leave the kernels intact. The problem is here you're talking about very fresh grain. It has to, that's what we learned before, that it has to be brought ideally from a place close to Yerushalayim so it's as fresh as possible. That means it has a high moisture content. If you beat it with sticks, it's going to bruise it. It's gonna damage it. Therefore, bekonim of a kochas chayotinai. So, therefore, the chachamim say they would have to beat it more gently with moist reeds or with kochos, which means stalks. Rashi describes like stalks of like cabbage or broccoli or whatever, like salt, gentle things, yeah. Kadesh alay yismayach, in order that it doesn't get crushed by a hard beating. So that would be...
take a bamboo to do that.
Yeah, what's that?
What's the difference between the Rameh and the...
So according to the Meir, what you're doing is first you're toasting it over the fire. First you're holding the actual grain still in the shells, still right, in the stalks and everything over the fire. According to the Chachamim, first you're getting it out of the shells and getting it out of the straw.
The
and yeah, because you're banging it gently with reeds and with broccoli stems and whatever. Kadesh lo yismayach, in order that it doesn't get crushed. And then, nisanu la'abu, then continue the Chachamim. Now, what do you do as far as the toasting it? Then you put it into an abuv. An abuv is, Rashi just says, it's a keli made out of copper, for reasons that we'll learn in the Gemara. But from the description over here, basically it's like a colander. The abuv hoya menukav, it had a hole in it. I don't know how you menukav. It's like a strainer, like a colander or something, yeah. It had a hole in it. Kadeshia, oh, show it the kule in order that the fire will be able to get everywhere. Will be able to affect all of the grain. If you put it inside a solid container, not all of it would get toasted by the fire. Like this, you have holes, so therefore the heat of the fire is able to get it everywhere. Okay, so they did that
without damaging it.
Right. Then shatchu bazara. After they finish that, the next thing they do is now they take the kernels of grain which have been threshed and which have been toasted. And they spread them out in the azara, v'haruach min hasheves bo, and the wind blows on it in order to dry it out. Because at this point, after this whole thing, after the threshing it and after the toasting it, it's very moist, and you need it dry in order to grind it effectively.
Even after the fire?
But the point is the fire brings out some of the moisture from it. It causes that some of the moisture from it condenses on the outside of it. So therefore, you need to put it, and you need to lay it out in the azara in order for the wind to blow on it and dry off that surface.
The wind
won't
blow it away.
Right.
How long does that take?
I don't know.
But
this is why. We learned before that they want to try to do the harvesting as quickly as possible because they have a lot to do, and the omer needs to be brought as early as possible in the morning. So, yeah.
One share you took?
No, so they took this. So far, we're talking, they're still working with the whole three star or five star, as the case may be. Yeah. Then nasnuhu l'rechayim shal goroises. Now the next thing they do is they put it into a grinding mill of goroises. So Rashi describes goroises is maloshim grisin. Grisin means split peas. When they grind up peas to make split peas like the split pea soup or whatever, they don't use grinding stones that are going to grind them into powder. They use grinding stones that do a more coarse grinding, so they end up with basically the split peas or large pieces of peas or whatever. Similarly over here, you use the same kind of grinding mill over here. The point being, Rashi says, the problem is like this. Grain in general, wheat, barley, any kind of grain, has a number of layers of shells. You have the shells that are cracked open during the threshing, where again, normally they would beat it with hard sticks, and over here, according to the Chachamim, they're beating it with soft sticks. So that gets rid of that. But afterwards there are thinner layers of shell around the kernel, which if you don't take those out, you don't have a fine flour. You have more like a coarse flour, like pumpernickel or something like that. So you want to get fine flour over here. If you were to grind them fine in a mill, You're going to wind up with pieces of the shell mixed in over there, and then even when you sift them, you're not going to be able to get them out. So instead, what you have to do is you have to do a very coarse kind of grinding. So that way, the pieces of shell will be large enough that they won't pass through the sieve, and therefore that you'll be able to get clean flour. So they do that, and then ultimately what they do is they get out of the original three sar or five sar, they get out one isaroin, and isaroin is one tenth of three sar. So if they started with three sa'ah, and we said that according to the Chachamim in the Mishnah, that's always, and according to Rabbi Shmuel, when it comes out on Shabbos, then it means they're getting out the fine flour is one-tenth of the original. If, according to Rabbi Shmuel, on weekdays, they started with five sa'ah, then it's like, one-fifteenth or so. Whatever it is, that fine flour, that geras caramel, was sifted with 13 sieves. And Rashi Britton come later on, from the next parak, that what it is they'd ultimately use fine sieves and coarse sieves in order to get out the best quality flour. Vashar, what about the rest? So now you have that 10% or whatever that's going to become the carbon oiler. What do they do with all the rest of the flour that's not such high quality? Shouldn't go to waste. Nifter, you can redeem it from Hekdesh. It belonged to Hekdesh until this point because the barley was bought with money from Hekdesh. It was bought with master shekel money. So like this, they redeem the rest of it. The nechal l'choladim, and anybody can eat it. Because at that point, it doesn't have kedusha. Only once it has kedusha, like goof, when it's placed in a kli shoreis, can you not be pardeh anymore. The 9/10 is not placed in a kli shoreis. Therefore, they can redeem it. And therefore, anybody can eat. So they keep 1/10, that's going to be the oimer. And not discard. Hekdesh sells the other 9/10, and whoever wants can eat it.
And the 1/10 they keep
is going to be the carbon oimer. Not necessarily the thinnest, but the best quality flour.
What's the best quality?
The best quality, there's no powder in it. Besides no dirt, obviously. No, but also there's no powder in it in particular. Whatever it has the best part of the grain in it. Yeah, like semolina. Yeah. Okay.
No powder.
Right. Okay. V'chayev v'chala, that part that they're redeeming from Hekdesh and that anybody can eat, is chayev and chala once they make it into dough, because by the time they're making it into dough, it's already been redeemed from Hekdesh, it's already cholin, therefore it's chayev and chala like any cholin dough. Or potter, not meiser, but it's potter from meiser, because at the point when it reached its state that you have, when does produce become chayev and meiser, which is going to be a whole discussion in the Gemara over here, we're going to get into the dinner of meiseris. When does produce become chayv and meiser? When it reaches the stage of gemar melacha. And gemar melacha, for every kind of produce is different. For grain, it's what's called miruach. You eventually get to a point where you have clean grain, only kernels, none of the outer shells, no dirt, no nothing, and then you heap it in a heap, and you smooth out the sides of the heap. That smoothing out is called miruach. At that point, it becomes chayv. That's gemar melacha. At that point, it becomes chayv.
How do you smooth it out?
You smooth it out. With the process with a pitchfork or something.
You
know that. Yeah, it comes up in many places in Shas. Anyway, the point is here, the miruach was done while it belonged to Hekdesh, because while it belonged to Hekdesh, that's about the miruach takes place before they grind it, and the grinding was still taking place while it belonged to Hekdesh. Therefore, it was potter from Meisah, because the miruach was done while it was Hekdesh, and therefore that other 9/10 is potter from Meisah.
Rebecca. How did the kernels come out of the shells?
So again, you have the coarser shells on the outside, which once they beat them, even they beat them gently, then it's able to come out. And the inner shells, what we're saying is that's why they ground it very coarsely, and then they would sift it with 13 sieves to get out all the pieces of shell that got ground together with them.
And they grounded it with what?
They ground it with rechayim shogoroisis, with a coarse kind of millstone.
Small millstones?
No, but millstones that produce a coarse kind of flour. Yeah.
How much was the oima?
So it was an isarin. It's the same as a shiur challah. A shiur challah. How much dough does a person have to make nowadays to be chayav in challah? Depends which post can you ask. Yeah, it's anywhere between 3 and 5 pounds.
Well, yeah. Able to do it the night time all at one time.
Yeah.
So fair.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of good.
Be so clear.
Okay. Yeah.
So clean.
Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Kiva Machayev Vachalo Vamaisis. Rabbi Kiva says, no, this 9/10 that you're being poida is not only obligated in Chala, it's also Chayev and Maisis for reasons that we'll discuss in the Gemara.
One hand to the other hand.
Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Now you have the pasuk that introduces the concept of bringing the korban ha'omer. So you have a couple of places in the Torah where it mentions bringing the korban ha'omer. One of them is the pasuk in Parashas Emor that we've been mentioning before, Sfarta Machamim Vachar Shabbos, Mi Yom Aviyachamis Omer Asnofa. But you also have a pasuk in Parashas Vayikra that mentions like this: the imtaku is mincha bikurim Hashem, and when you bring a mincha bikurim to Hashem, im usually means if, but this is one of the three places where im means when, where it means when you bring the mincha bikurim, it means when. Oh, it has to be aviv, it has to be fresh grain, kolori ba'esh, toasted in fire, geres caramel, fine flour of caramel, and we'll see on Amud Beis what caramel means, but basically it means fresh grain. Kasher, that's minchas bikurim, that is how you should offer your minchas bikurim. So let's analyze the words in the pasuk. Aviv, the aviv. The word aviv means what it sounds like. It means it needs to be the beginning of the harvest. Nothing else is supposed to be harvested before that, as we'll learn in a couple of blocks. Kolori ba'esh, when it says it has to be toasted in fire, melamet shahar yisrael, mahaviv anoyta ba'esh, that teaches us that they had to singe it in fire, kedei l'kayim by mitzvah koli, in order to be mekayim this mitzvah, that it should be toasted, divrei rav meir. Hamahavim, that they would hold it over the fire and let it get toasted a little bit in the fire, yeah. Divrei rav meir, that's what rav meir says, like he said in the Mishnah, that they do it while it's still in the stalks. V'chamim, the chum say no, that's not what the meaning of kolori is. Ein ur loshen koli ala davar acher. If we do like you're saying, Rav Meir, then that ur, which means fire, is not an expression of koli, of toasting, ala davar acher. It has to be that you're using something else to toast it in. There has to be a kaveh.
Kali from
that,
like
kaveh? No. The chum to say that the expression koli implies that it's being toasted in something. Not that it's just being held over the fire by itself, like you may have said.
How do they know that?
Okay, so how is that? So it means, in other words, that it has to be in a keli. And furthermore, ein loshen koli ela dover kolil. The word koli means something kolil. Rashi says the word kolil is related to the word nechoshes kolol, which means shiny copper. So therefore, it has to be actually, so in order for it to be koli, it has to be done, it has to be toasted in a shiny copper keli.
Kolom
in shiny, yes. So, okay, so how do they do that? Abu shokloyas hayasham, they had this abu, they had this colander type thing, this strainer type thing, that people who sell toasted grain use such a thing to toast grain before they sell it.
With the holes,
they had one in the Bismikdash. It had holes all over the place in it, like a sieve. In order that the fire can affect and penetrate and all of it. Okay. So that's the Chachamim say. You, the mayor, are thinking that the word koli just means it has to be held over the fire, but that wouldn't be called koli. The word koli implies it has to be within something. And specifically, that something has to be nechoshes kolo, has to be a copper, has to be a copper.
It has to be a keli.
Yeah, it has to be a keli.
According
to the mayor, a mayor would learn
differently. Has to be a
keli. Yeah, the mayor would learn differently. He would say that koli just means it has to be toasted, yeah. Okay.
And it has to be a keli nechoshes.
According to the Chachamim, yeah. Okay. Next, let's analyze the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Oviv kolori geres." The pasuk says it has to be the new grain. Oviv again meaning the first grain crop, the first harvested grain. Oviv means the beginning of the crop. It means the fresh crop. Kolori, we said it has to, yeah. Kolori, we said it has to be toasted. Geres, and we say it has to be geres, which means flour. Now, what does that mean? Any day in Oviv Kolori and Geres Kolori. Now, what does that mean? Does Kolori refer back to Oviv? That while it's still in the state of Oviv as fresh grain, does it have to be toasted? Or is it that after it's ground and becomes Geres, then you have to toast it? Which is it? We don't know.
Geres
means flour.
Flour.
Yeah. So what is it? Is it Oviv Kolori or is it Kolori Geres? Well, Shu'oima Ba'esh. But since the pasuk doesn't just say Aviv Kolori Geres, it puts in there in the middle over there the word Ba'esh. The expression of the pasuk is Aviv Kolori Ba'esh Geres Caramel. That it has to be the new grain toasted in the fire, Geres, and it has to be flour. Well then, Hissek Inyan, so the word Ba'esh breaks it up, and
what
that makes it...
You wasn't saying pasuk.
The pasuk says Aviv Kolori Ba'esh Geres Caramel. The point is, since it, therefore we know that now we're meant to read the word Aviv, Kolori, Ba'esh together, and therefore it means it has to be toasted in the fire while it's still Aviv, while it's still the fresh kernels, after that, they grind it and make Geres out of it.
Because Ba'esh is mastic,
right. Okay. Now, what does the word caramel mean? The next word in the pasuk is caramel. Yeah. So what does the word caramel mean? It means rach umal. It means it has to be soft. Rach means soft, and mal, it has to be so soft that you could crush it between your fingers. So therefore, in other words, we take the word karma, we break it up, we take the chof and resh and flip them around to make the word rach, and then the second half of the word is the word mal, which means crushed.
Any connection to mila?
Yeah, maybe. I think there's a certain similarity, yeah.
The word karma means crushed?
The word caramel means fresh grain. It means grain that's so fresh and so soft that you could crush it between your fingers. V'chein hu omer, and I'll give you other examples, he says, where we see that we take a word in Tanakh and we darshan it as nutrikun, we darshan it as a shorthand, where we have one word which is meant as like initials of, or like initials or key words from a whole phrase. So you have like this. A pasuk in Nevi'im, at the beginning of Akorah of Tazria, the ish va mi Baal Shalisha, a man came from Baal Shalisha, which is an area in Eretz Yisrael, vayove li'isha elikim, he brought to the man of Hashem, this is Elisha, he brought to Elisha, there was a famine going on, but he brings to Elisha, lechem b'kosheh, he was from Baal Shalisha, he comes from Baal Shalisha, which is the name of a place, he comes to the Navi Elisha, and brings him lechem bikurim, the bread made from the first grain of the year, the esrim lechem sa'urim, 20 loaves of barley bread, the caramel bitzik loinai, and he brings caramel, which we just said means fresh soft grain, bitzik loinai. So we're going to explain what bitzik loinai means. Vayomer, and Elisha says, tema om v'yechelu, give it to all the people to eat, and you have Elisha's Meshoreh says this isn't enough food for all the Talmidim we have over here, and Elisha tells him, don't worry, koyom Hashem ochel v'hoser, and sure enough, there's enough for all of them. Okay, so what does bitzik loinai mean? The simple meaning of bitzik loinai, Mephoshim say over there, means that it means he brought it in a sack. But in a sack. But the Gemara Darshan, maybe, I don't know. No, because they didn't speak Greek in that time. Okay, I don't know. Anyway. It means, we darshan it like this. We darshan the word b'tzikloinai, ba, he came, the yotzaklonu, and he poured out for us the grain, the ochalnu, and we ate it, the novahoya, and it was very pleasant. So the word b'tzikloinai breaks down, it's like as if it's an abbreviation, for ba, yotzaklonu, ochalnu, and novahoya. So we see there's another example.
There?
So, because you get the Vilchalnu from the third to last letter of the word Vitzikloin. Right. The Novahoya. And the Nun Vav stands for the Novahoya and it was good. So therefore we see there's another example where we dash in a word as Nitzrikin, just like we did with Karna. But Oimer, and here's another example from a Pasuk. You have a pasuk in you have a whole section in Mishlei over there where Shlomo HaMelech describes the danger in you have an isha zayna, a woman whose husband is away from town and decides that she has the opportunity to fool around, so she convinces a guy to come with her. She says, my husband's away, let's go have a fun time, and she says that. You have the nimshal itself, the mushal itself obviously has meaning in and of itself. The nimshal as well, Rashi mentions on the psukim over there, it also is that the nimshal is about the dangers of minus, the dangers of reading and learning about things that are against Torah, where a person, you know, philosophies and whatever that are against Torah, where a person can be very easily seduced into them.
2 years ago.
Yeah, just like we learned about Chokhmas Yevanis, yeah. Okay, so in the pasuk, she uses the expression, nis'alsa ba'ahovim. The simple meaning of nis'alsa means like let's enjoy ourselves with love. But here's another example. The word nis'alsa is an abbreviation. Nisa v'nitin, let's give and take. V'nala, and we'll go up. V'nismach, and we'll be happy. We'll go up onto the bed. V'nismach, and we'll be happy. V'nischata ba'ahovim, and we'll enjoy ourselves with love. Nischata, Rashi brings from a Gemara in Tainis, means like to enjoy. Nitayo, Rashi says, like we'll play around. The word chait means a sin, yes, but over here she's trying to convince him to do it. She's not going to tell him it's a sin, so therefore Rashi prefers to explain that it means natayo, that we're going to enjoy ourselves. Okay. V'oimer, and here's another example from a pasuk where we darshan an unusual word in a pasuk as in the Tzrikim. A pasuk from Eov, Hashem is talking to Eov about the amazing things I created in the world, but you have no idea even how they work. He starts saying, knach renonim ne'elosa. The ring of the renonim ne'elosa, so ne'elosa. So again, the simple meaning is ne'elosa means it's happy. Rashi explains, knaf renonim is a bird called bar yuchni, which the Gemara talks about elsewhere. The Gemara talks about in Bechorot, is an extremely large bird. An extremely large bird with extremely large, no, even larger, no, with extremely large eggs. So yeah, some of the Mephoshim over there say that it might be an ostrich, large eggs. So some of the Mephoshim say that it might be an ostrich. I don't know if anyone say a dinosaur. Some of the portions say it might be an ostrich. But you have also, you know, there are various kinds of extinct birds that are known to have existed in fairly recent times that had large eggs. Moas in New Zealand, and elephant birds, I think they're called, or something, in Madagascar or whatever. So it could also be one of them. Whatever it is, anyway. So knakrinonim, so the ring of the singing bird, ne'elosa. So what does ne'elosa stand for? Noise. It means he carries his egg. Oila, he goes up to his nest, v'nischata, and he puts it there gently into the nest. Here Rashi explains, nischata, unlike the previous one, where nischata meant to play around, here it means he places it down gently. Loshon ha'gadar, Rashi says. He lays it down. Tosfos brings a different girsa from Sifri, not v'nischata, but umochsa, which means again that he puts it down gently. And then we have, here's another example in a pasuk where we darshan a word as nisritron. Ki yora taderech hanegdi. This is in Parshas Balak. We have the Malach, because the Malach stopping Bilam from going three times, and finally he appears to Bilam, and so why did I come out to stop you? Because ki yora taderech hanegdi. So the simple meaning of ki yora taderech, Rashi says over there, means I see you in a hurry to go and do the wrong thing, therefore I'm trying to stop you for your own good. But again, the word yoras is an unusual word, so we darshan it, yorasa, the donkey that you were riding on was afraid of me, roasa, she saw that I was there, nasa, and therefore she turned off to the side.
So it means?
So we see, so therefore there's another example where we take the word yara, yoras, and darshan it as a nutrition for yara, roasa, and nasa. Yeah.
Nasa
means turn to the side, yeah. So there we have five examples of words in Tanakh that we darshan them as nutrition. The same way as we do with caramel, where we darshan as rach and mal. The same way we do with these other words, where we darshan them as initials or key letters of words. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned differently. That the word caramel stands for karmole. It stands for a full pillow. Meaning, in other words, kar, like I said, like karamuk sausage, it means, in other words, the grain, the individual grain should be full, should be as ripe as possible, and as full of moisture as possible. So like they're completely full, like not, they're not deflated a little bit, as they would be when they start drying out. Like a pillow stuffed full of feathers or whatever.
Will he put, can he touch it with his hands to feel it? Seeing it, you can't. Maybe feeling it is better.
What? We're talking about the grains of barley over here. Of course you can feel them with your hands. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Not kar and
mal. Not rachmal, but karmole. Right. Okay. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah, for Rabbi Akiva Machaya B'chalo HaMaiser, we said that the 9/10ths, or whatever percentage it is, of the flour that doesn't end up being used for the Omer, we say you buy it back from Hektish, and anybody can eat it. We said the Tanakama said it's Chayev in Chala and Potter for Meiser, and Rabbi Akiva said it's Chayev in Meiser as well. So let's analyze that. Omer of Kahana, Omer Hoya Rabbi Akiva, what it is like this. Rabbi Akiva used to say, Miruach Hektish ein, Miruach Hektish ein Potter. When miruach, this that we said, that you put the grain, you put the clean grain in a pile, and you smooth out the sides of the pile, which is the gemar malacha, at that point, if it becomes chayiv and meiser, Rabbi Akiva says that if that's done when the grain belongs to hektish, that doesn't pater it from meiser. It's still chayiv and meiser. That is why he says in our Mishnah that it's chayiv and meiser. Because the miruach was done by hektish, doesn't matter, Rabbi Akiva says, that doesn't pater it from meiser. Even though the miruach was done when it was of the property of hektish, Rabbi Akiva would still hold that it's chayiv. However, Mosid Rav Sheshet, but Rav Sheshet asks on that, we learn in a braisa like this, Moisah Sholosh Sin Halalu Maho Yoisin Boy, what do they do with the remainder of these three saw, again, after they took out the one isoran of the fine flour that's going to be the Korban Omer?
In order to get one isoran,
they need to start with three saw, that's what we're saying.
So they one saw.
So what do they do? So Moisah, the remainder of the three saw, what do they do with the 9/10ths? What do they do with it? Niftev nechal chodam. It's redeemed from hektish. Anybody can eat it. V'chayev v'chala u'potter min ha'maiser. And as we said in our Mishnah, as the Tanakhama said, it's chayev and chala, it's potter from maiser. Rabbi Akiva v'chayev v'chala u'maiser. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says no, it's chayev in chala and in maiser. And here, so far that's the same as our Mishnah. But then the Braisa adds that Omru Loi, the Chachamim said to Rabbi Akiva, Why are you saying it's chayev and meiser? Poja miyad gizbo yechiyach. Let's prove the situation from the from a different case where you have a regular grain that belongs to hektish and it grows and develops while it belongs to hektish and eventually miruach is done when it's still in the property of hektish. The gizbo, by the way, the gizbo is the treasurer of the one of the treasurers of the Beit Mikdash. There were various levels of treasurer, there were various levels of officials in the Beit Mikdash, but the Gizbarim are basically the lowest level, the lowest level treasury officials of the Beit Mikdash. They're the ones who deal with on a day-to-day basis the various things that are donated to Hekdash and the disposition of them and whatever.
And the highest?
The highest is called. So you have, I think, there's a Kohen Gadol technically is the top of the hierarchy, but then under him you have something called Katiloikin, and under them you have Amakolin, and under them you have Gizbarim. Yeah, you have several layers of management. There's different layers of management, basically. Okay. Anyway, the point is, so Poda miyad gizbo yechiyach. So the Chachamim say to Rabbi Akiva, consider the case where you have grain that was grown and that miruach was done while it was the property of Hekdesh, while it's still under the control of the gizbar, and then you go and are poda from Hekdesh, shachayev b'chala or potter from
meiser.
Yeah, so then it's chayev and chala and it's potter from meiser. And apparently, since the Chachamim are making that argument to Rabbi Akiva, they understand that Rabbi Akiva would agree with that concept. So v'im isa de miruach hektish any poter, Yudah Kahana are telling us that Rabbi Akiva b'chlal doesn't hold of that concept, that if miruach is done while it belongs to hektish, that it's poter. In that case, my ta'amilei, then what are they telling him? He. Then in that case, what they're telling him is exactly the point that they're arguing about. They're trying to bring him a proof, just like in a regular case. They're trying to bring a proof from something that he agrees with, and then apply it to our case of the Omer, of the Moshe of the Omer. If Rabbi Akiva disagrees on the whole concept, then what they're saying doesn't follow, right? And besides that, also I have another proof against what Rav Kahana says. Eisre Rav Kahana batachlifa l'Rav Kahana b'matisya. You have many Rav Kahanas in Shas. Rav Kahana batachlifa asks Rav Kahana b'matisya. On the side over here, it says actually it's not supposed to be b'matisya. It's actually supposed to be. It's a copyist mistake for miditanya that we learn in a braisa. Somebody misread the word miditanya and got out of it b'matisya. Anyway, the Braita says, Rabbi Akiva, okay, it happens. Rabbi Akiva mechayev b'chalo v'maisis. Why does Rabbi Akiva say in our Mishnah that this leftover flour is chayev and chala and maisis? Not because he doesn't hold that miruach, not because he doesn't agree that miruach, when it's done by hektish, passes it, but l'fishal in nitnu moit el l'sarach lahen. Because Rabbi Akiva says like this, when hektish originally bought this grain, they didn't buy the entire 3 saw or 5 saw to begin with. They bought only the one isaron that they end up using for the omer. In other words, they paid only for that one isaron. The rest of it is not the property of hektish to begin with. So therefore, okay, so you still have to be poder from hektish for appearance's sake, so people don't think that you can be poder, that you can but get hektish things from hektish. But in principle, hektish only bought the one isaron. So that's why the rest of it is
packed. They took more, to make it, they took 3 saws.
They took 3 saws,
so
fine. But that's what
they really bought 3.
Okay, but the understanding with the owner was basically that they're only paying him for the one installment.
So they have to take 3.
Some drabbanon, you say that you should be poder to people so people don't think that things can be taken from hektish without paying. Fine, but in principle, the other 9/10 never belonged to hektish in the first place. So of course they're chayiv and meiser, because the miruach of them was done, they didn't belong to hektish.
It still doesn't resolve the discussion.
No, but it does, because in other words, it shows, not like Rav Kahana, that miruach done by hektish is still chayev and meiser. No, if it actually belonged to hektish, it would be potter. Because it didn't belong to hektish at the time.
Yeah, but if it had belonged,
like that, apparently, from this braisa, it sounds like Rav Kahana would say that it's potter. Yeah. So that contradicts Rav Kahana's understanding.
Right.
Ella, Omer Rav Yechanan, so Rav Yechanan says, you're right. We can't accept Rav Kahana's explanation of Rav Akiva. We have to say, Talmud Oruchu B'fiv Shor Rav Akiva. Rav Akiva has an established teaching, it has an established teaching that he learned from his Rebbeim, Shaloy Nisim Moris El Sarach Lahem, what we just said, that Hekdesh to begin with only gave money for the Isarin, and therefore the rest of it never really belonged to Hekdesh, only what's needed, therefore the rest of it never belonged to Hekdesh, therefore had it all belonged to Hekdesh, then the Miruach of the whole thing would in fact pater it, but because 9/10 of it didn't belong to Hekdesh to begin with, then therefore the Miruach of it makes it Chayev and Maaser just like any.
Considered my basically the rest.
No, so the rest of it would be Vada. It would be no Meiser and Hagen from it yet. Therefore, you have the 1/10 that comes to Korban is Potter from Meiser, and the remainder of it is Chayav and Meiser. Okay.